the most important organization, in my opinion, in the state of Texas to support our Texas physicians is the Texas Medical Association. They are members of the Austin chapter, so we see them a lot of times at that meeting. And I got a message from Melissa. Are you hearing me? No? Okay. I'll get it in a little bit. Okay, good. Our friend at TMA is Rocky Wilcox, who connected us to the appropriate person, which would have been Heather. And Heather brought us our speaker today. So thanks to all of you for helping us out. And I think all of us are concerned about what is happening in physicians' offices and how they can possibly keep their doors open with all of this going on. So we're going to learn what TMA is doing. And I want to introduce you to Yvonne. Her name is spelled funny, but it's very easy to say, Mooncoon. And I like that. She's a registered nurse by trade. She is a practice management consultant with TMA with 25 years experience in various healthcare settings, including primary and urgent care practices, hospital, rehabilitation, and home health. Her expertise includes medical practice quality initiatives, patient-centered medical home recognition, chronic disease management, EHR utilization, case management, and quality metric analytics and outcome reporting. Okay, thank you very much. And I'm going to go on mute. And Yvonne, it's all yours. And people, you know, if they've got questions or anything, just we want to make this fun for you and fun for all of us. Okay?
Thank you. All right, so I'm going to start by sharing my screen. And listen, if you have questions, just go ahead and type them in through the chat. Malcolm is going to continue to watch that, and so he'll let me know when there are questions. But I do want to have some interaction. I want to make sure that you get the information you need. There's a lot of information here, so make sure you listen fast. All right, hold on. Let me get my screen shared here. All right, there we go. One more thing. Hold on. Perfect. Okay. Everybody see my screen? We're good to go? All right. I got the nod from Malcolm. All right. So we're going to be talking about maintaining practice viability within the whole COVID-19 environment and hopefully beyond. Let's see here. Let me just get my bearings. There we go. There's my dressed up picture, which I'm not dressed up today because I'm at home. And hopefully you will not hear my chihuahua in the background. We want to just do a quick disclaimer. I am not an attorney, nor do I play one on television. So this information is not meant to be a substitute for advice an attorney or any other professional, CPA or otherwise. I do make every effort, though, to make sure everything's as accurate as possible. All right, moving on to the agenda. All right, so we're going to talk about business interruption and the general viability concerns and financial assistance options, lists of questions that you would want to ask the banks, how we're going to deal with rent and other fixed and variable operating expenses, and then some tax benefits, QPP, quality MIPS kind of things, and telemedicine. So like I said, a lot of information, so we're going to try to get through it quick. All right. So the first thing we want to talk about is business interruption. So probably the most significant burdensome thing that's happened to our practices and ASCs and hospital systems as a whole has been the limitation on non-urgent and elective surgeries and procedures. So on March 22nd, Governor Abbott signed an executive order, GA-09, that was in effect actually until midnight tonight, saying that licensed healthcare facilities must postpone all surgeries not immediately medically necessary in order to prevent the spread of COVID-19, to help maintain the limited PPE we had to begin with and to free up beds and staff for potential COVID patients. And on March 24th, the Texas Medical Board released emergency rules on the provision of non-urgent elective surgeries and procedures in all licensed inpatient and outpatient facilities. And they released FAQs to provide guidance on those rules and the governor's order. Those FAQs were last updated on March 29th. However, I suspect that they will be renewed in the not too distant future because Governor Abbott revised the executive order and signed executive order GA-15 to sort of change and extend that limit to the urgent elective surgeries. Now that says that all licensed healthcare professionals and all licensed healthcare facilities must continue to postpone all surgeries and procedures that are not medically necessary. And then they go on to provide a little bit more information about what is considered medically not necessary or medically necessary. And they talk about diagnosing or correcting a serious medical condition or preserving the life of the patient. So of course those procedures are allowed. If there's an issue that it would be a serious risk to their life or their condition. There are some exceptions though. Any procedure that if performed in accordance with the commonly accepted standard of clinical practice would not deplete the hospital capacity or the PPE needed to cope with. Sorry, that's got a little typo there. Needed to cope with COVID-19. So if you're not using a whole bunch of supplies and you're able to meet standard of practice, fine. You can do the surgery or the procedure. Or if this licensed healthcare facility wants to notify Texas HHSC in writing that it will reserve at least 25% of resources for the treatment of COVID-19 patients, making sure that they think about the range of severity that those patients can have from, you know, just needing some oxygen to needing ventilation. and then also that they will not request any PPE from any public source, federal, state, local, nothing during the COVID-19 disaster. So if a facility can abide by those things and provides that certification in writing, then they're able to move forward. Now this executive order is in place until May 8th. So still with a degree of limit, but with some exceptions and opening up. All right, so we've also dealt with limited inpatient visits and difficulty with our supply chain, having appropriate PPE for our staff, and now even for patients with them having to wear masks and things. The redistribution of vital resources, so even healthcare workers have been redistributed in different areas than they may be used to and that we're used to. All right, so this threatens our practice viability in several ways. We have a loss of our workforce, key people. This could be decision makers, a loss of revenue, which is, I mean, we on the TMA telehealth meeting last night, there was a large portion of physicians that are reporting 75% or more loss of revenue. Damage to reputation in terms of, you know, patients get used to not coming to a particular office or they start going somewhere else or something of that nature. Lack of interruption of insurance coverage. If you don't have the proper insurance coverage or there's an interruption in it in some way, shape, or form. And then, of course, decreased cash flow. And the decreased cash flow, we're seeing that with respect to some of the waivers for cost sharing and that type of thing. A lot of practices are just now realizing how much their regular daily cash flow was reliant upon those cost sharing components. All right, so we've got all these issues. How do we deal with them? Should I get a loan? So this is a discussion that business owners or physicians want to have with a business banker, with their CPA, perhaps even your attorney. You want to ask your CPA to review the practice's current financial health cash flows, determine any trends or fluctuations in your cash flow to help project the future as it was and as it could potentially, will potentially be now. So having a one-page financial overview of the health of your practice is really beneficial. As your revenue decreases, it's important to know where your monthly expenses are, If you haven't implemented a profit and loss statement, you want to make sure that you start doing that or get your CPA to help you with that. That combines cost reports and income statements and productivity, which is particularly helpful if you have more than one physician in a practice. That way you compare and contrast productivity against one provider from another just to see the difference. And then this is ideally produced on a monthly basis, and hopefully will also give you a backwards look 12 months or less or more. All right, so what financing is available? All right, so these are just the general loan options. So the U.S. Small Business Administration loans, lines of credit, advancing term loans, payment deferrals, extensions of interest only payments, loan refinancing, new conventional loans. Now, if you go through financing with a private bank to do a private, like a conventional loan, something like that, you will not be able to do the SBA in addition. So it is kind of a one or the other type of thing. There are a few of the SBAs that you can put together, but if you're going for something like a conventional loan or conventional line of credit, you might have some issues with that. All right, so the Federal Coronavirus Aid, Relief, and Economic Stability Act was signed into law on March 27th. Now, currently, we know that the SBA is not everybody knows that they're not accepting new applications. However, this should be changing soon as we're waiting a Senate vote, which should happen later this afternoon. And then the House is supposed to vote on that package tomorrow, if all goes well, if everybody passes it along like they should. There's going to be about $450 billion in that package. $310 million will be going to the Paycheck Protection Program, a part of that $310 billion will also be set aside for the smaller banks, which was part of the complaint around the first package, that larger banks got it, so some of our underserved communities who might use smaller local banks didn't have access to that money. So there will be a reserve fund set aside. They didn't say exactly how much yet, but there will be some set aside for the smaller banks and the smaller communities. So we're just waiting for that that vote to come out and hopefully be finalized by tomorrow and funds be available by tomorrow evening. Oops, sorry. Going backwards. There we go. All right, so SBA generally offers loans and grants for companies with fewer than 500 employees. the Economic Injury Disaster Loan Advance is a smaller, more immediate disbursement of money that comes with applying for the EIDL program. So it's $1,000 per employee up to $10,000. And there was some confusion around that to begin with. Originally it was thought, oh, it's $10,000, but it is $1,000 per employee. And it's not, you don't have to repay it. So that's the nice thing about it. So you kind of want to think of it as a grant. All right, so that brings us to the actual EIDL program. So this is a low-interest, long-term loan capped at 3.75% for small businesses practices of 500 or fewer employees or small businesses. And you can use those to pay fixed debts like payroll, accounts payable, other bills that could have been paid had the disaster not occurred. Borrowers can ask for up to $2 million again, and the maximum term of this loan is 30 years. The overall process for obtaining these loans will depend on the lender. The paperwork and the documents they request might be a little bit different. Practices actually have till December 16th to apply for this loan. All right, so let's talk about the Paycheck Protection Program. That's the big one. So this program, practices can take up to 2.5 times the average monthly payroll amount, excluding payroll for those who make more than $100,000 annually. So there's a cap of $10 million. So example, if the average monthly payroll is $10,000 and no employees earn more than $100,000 annually, the maximum loan amount would be $25,000. So practices can be approved for this loan. Again, once they fund, once they have the package put together and they refund it, they can expect to receive funds from the SBA approved lender within 10 calendar days of the date of loan approval, ideally. It's a loan, technically a loan. However, the good news is that it doesn't need to be repaid if the practice complies with all of the loan requirements, particularly using at least 75% of the loan specifically for payroll, and the practice keeps employees on the payroll or rehires them as quickly as possible if you've already laid them off, and then keeps them for 4 weeks after the loan origination date. Forgiveness is reduced if full-time headcount declines or if salary and wages decrease. If the practice does need to repay all or portion of the loan, you'll have to do that within 2 years at an interest rate of 1%. And those payments would be deferred for 6 months. No collateral personal guarantees are required. The government nor the lenders will charge any fees for loan originations or anything of that nature. And you can apply going to the SBA.gov website once they open those applications up. Now, I will tell you that the current applications they have, they are going to continue to process. So once that funding is put back into the system, they'll start granting those loans. And I imagine that at some point in time within the next few days, we'll start to see that application process open back up so that they'll start receiving new applications. Now, another one that's helpful is the Medicare Advance Payment Program. So especially if you've got a physician practice that sees a lot of Medicare patients. Hold on a second. Back up one. There we go. Eligible physicians are those who have billed Medicare for claims within the last 180 days. Checking my notes here. They're financially solvent, not in bankruptcy, free from any active medical review or any problems with complaints or anything, in good standing with Medicare, all that kind of stuff. So if a physician meets this criteria, they can ask their Medicare administrative contractor to provide an advance payment of up to 100% of the Medicare payment amount that is based on a 3-month look back period. So for Texas, that's Novitas. That's our MAC. So once requested from MAC, they'll issue the payment within 7 calendar days from the date of the request. And they've already approved over 21,000 requests totaling $51 billion. CMS has a fact sheet on it on their website. You just go to the cms.gov and go to their coronavirus section. These funds do need to be repaid. So you want to make sure you set a reasonable goal, even though you can get up to 100% of that 3-month look back period. If you could survive on 50% or 75%, then you might want to do that because there's a 120-day delay, and then it requires repayment. So let's see what that repayment looks like. You'll submit claims. So once you've submitted for the advance payment and you've gotten your funds, you will continue to submit claims as usual for that 120-day period of delay, and you will actually receive full payments during those 120 days. At the end of the 120 days, every claim you submit thereafter will offset the advance payment. So you'll be putting in claims that you actually don't receive cash money for because it's going against that loan. The loan repayment period is 210 days. So it does have to be completely paid off by that time. That's for Part A and Part B suppliers, providers and suppliers. There is a difference for Part C and D. Alrighty, other financial products, and we're just going to kind of blow through these because I know we have a limited amount of time, and there's some other things that might be a little more important. The financial pieces that we've just talked about with the SBA are some of the bigger programs that are available to a majority of people. These other financial products will really depend on whether you have an existing relationship with a bank, because some of them are kind of being strict about that. or whether you want to go for a more conventional type of loan. So line of credit is one that you could ask for, or physicians could ask for. Those funds can be used for any type of business expense. It's you just use it as you need it. So you're only paying interest on what you use, that type of thing. They're advancing term loans. They are sort of like lines of credit that convert into a short-term loan with a fixed interest rate with regular monthly payments. And then there are a potential for loan payment deferrals. Now, this is a matter of just calling the bank and talking to them, explaining the situation, asking what programs they have available. Sometimes they'll do a 90-day deferment on existing loans. And then after that time period, you would restart your payments, and those previous payments would be tacked onto the end of the loan. All righty, I think I just skipped one. Sorry, guys. There we go. So extension of interest only loans. So these would be practices that maybe started up recently and have a brand new loan. It might be in their interest only period currently. Maybe they were able to negotiate a 6 month to a 1 year interest only loan. Maybe they might want to ask if that could be extended for another 6 months, something of that nature. This might be a decent time to refinance a loan if you have one that you've had for a little bit, you've had an existing loan. It may change the interest rates because those have definitely dropped, but it also may change the terms and you might get a reprieve from payments for a couple months before your payments restart. And then of course, there's always a new conventional loan. So we're hearing from banks that for practice startups and things like that, they're actually still doing business as usual. So you still have to qualify and that type of work. There's less paperwork than with an SBA, but the qualifying pieces are probably a little more stringent right now than some of those SBA products. Alrighty, then there's some local type of funding sources. So there's a Sister Emergency Relief Grant for women-owned businesses. There are other grants for minority businesses, immigrant businesses. So there's some money out there for those types of things. People Fund, they offer flexible underwriting and no prepayment penalties. Lyft Fund will help with entrepreneurs who want to have a bit of access to loans from their commercial sources throughout Texas. And then the William Mann Jr. Community Development Corporation is also one that provides loans to women-owned businesses. All right, so that's it for the funding sources. These are the commonly requested documents. So if you're preparing to look at these loans, whether it's SBA or any others, there may be some documents required from you. General business info, your tax ID number, your business owner name, your DBA name, URL for your website, 2019 tax returns, your IRS form 941, list of employees that are paid more than $100,000 a year. Your total average monthly payroll, any entity documents that you have, bylaws, incorporation statements, that type of thing, your statement of good standing, IRS letters, any entity documents, as I said, and assumed name certificate if possible. And then you want to ask them some questions. So they want to get some information from you, but you want to get some information from them too. You want to ask them, do I have to be an existing customer to get the loan? Can I defer payments? Can I have an interest-only time period? What programs do you offer? How are those interest rates? What are they and what are the total costs? You're going for a conventional loan, you will have some potential closing costs to pay, that type of thing. What will the payment schedule be? When will the payments start? That type of thing. How long does the application process take? How long does it take till I get my money? And then what is your business, Better Business Bureau rating? And do you mind if I talk to some of your previous customers? Those are some other good questions to ask. All right, so beyond that, looking at your practice expenses. So we have some fixed expenses that you can't really do a whole lot about in terms of changing. Rent is rent. Mortgage payments are mortgage payments. Your staff salary, equipment that you might lease, that type of thing that you intend on keeping, which means you have to continue paying that lease amount. Since those are some of the things that are fixed. So what can we do about those? Insurance premiums are also something that may be one of your fixed income payout issues. So just some updates real quick before we talk about the other fixed expenses. TMLT will not cancel any physician policy for non-payment. It may change status to leave of absence or for part-time basis if physicians have cut hours, that type of thing. Med Group has postponed some due dates for their premiums. Doctor's Company will adjust some policy cancellations and premium installment due dates. Pro Assurance is suspending their policy cancellation through June 30th. So folks are trying to give a little bit of leeway where they can. Alrighty, so for your rent payments, some commercial leases have something called a force majeure, and that might allow them to get out of the lease if they can't fulfill the terms of the contract, or maybe they are having some issues and want to suspend performance under the contract or even terminate the contract. So that's something that you want to read through your lease, get some consultation with an attorney, and then talk to your landlord. There are also some other options with your landlord because they're hurting too. It all trickles downhill. So they've got a mortgage to make likely, and so they're relying on your money and you're relying on somebody else's money. So talk to them, request deferred payments or a lowered payment during the next couple of months. Or if you're in your renewal period, you can renegotiate your lease. And there are several companies around Austin that can assist you with that. And you might end up being able to lower your rent payment that way. Now we have some variable expenses as well. These are a little bit easier to play around with. Supplies. Obviously, if you're not seeing patients in the office, you may not be going through supplies like you used to. So if you have any auto shipments of those, cancel them. Order supplies only when you need them. If you have any auto payments for things like shredding or biohazard or laundry, anything like that, that obviously you're not using as much of or at all on a daily basis right now, you would want to cancel those or suspend those services. Forgo paying bonuses. A physician may have to adjust even their own salary in order to maintain the practice. So that's, again, why that profit and loss statement I talked about earlier is so important to make sure you're looking through that. Now, believe it or not, there are some tax benefits. And again, all of this comes down to trying to save money and make money and get tax breaks and things like that anywhere you can, because every little bit counts. So the Family First Coronavirus Response Act goes through the end of this year and is for private employers less than 500. Now, previously, they didn't necessarily have to pay sick pay and that type of thing. However, because of COVID-19, if the reason is related to COVID-19, companies, employers are required to pay employees sick leave. And so I will tell you that there are some tax breaks for that. Workers may receive up to 80 hours of paid sick leave for their own health needs or to care for others, and an additional 10 weeks for family leave to care for a child whose school or place of care is closed or child care providers closed or unavailable due to COVID. So the FFCRA covers the cost of this paid leave by providing small businesses with refundable tax credits. So certain self-employed individuals in similar circumstances will be entitled to similar credits. And so for more information on that, you want to go to irs.gov website. They have a tab specifically for coronavirus related issues. They've also extended the tax filing deadline, which I'm sure you already are aware of, till July 15th. So that has helped out a little bit. Some employers may have a refundable payroll tax credit for employee retention if they were fully or partially closed to due to an order from a government authority limiting travel or commerce or group meetings, things like that related to COVID-19. So where applicable, the tax credits are equal to 50% of qualifying wages paid to each employee. So up to $10,000 per employee. So these tax credits are not allowed where the employer takes advantage of the paycheck protection loan, though. So if you're doing the paycheck protection loan, you don't get the tax break. If for some reason you don't get the paycheck protection loan, this is something that may be able to help you on the back end. Quality reporting has been extended. So this is a little bit of a relief of burden to some of our physicians. Put very simply, if you are a single physician office and you're a MIPS eligible physician practice, if you have not submitted any data year to date, then you don't have to submit any data, and you will simply automatically get the extreme and uncontrollable circumstance policy kick in, and you'll get a neutral payment in or adjustment in payment year 2021 for this performance year 2019. If you are a singular physician's office and you have submitted some data, if you've submitted in more than one category, you will need to fill out the application for the extreme and uncontrollable circumstances policy and get that submitted by April 30th. Same goes for virtual groups and groups and virtual groups. So those folks will need to submit an application regardless if they previously submitted data or not. If you are not planning on finishing the data submission, or you're not planning on submitting at all, the groups and virtual groups will need to submit an application for that exceptional circumstances. And last but not least, all right, telemedicine. Oops, sorry. One more back. Telemedicine. So this has been helpful to some practices right now that are not able to see patients in person. CMS relaxed quite a few of the regulations, which I'm sure several of you are aware of. They're now paying for many different types of telemedicine, telehealth visits, virtual care, e-visits, telephone visits. Telehealth visits are paying at the same rate as an in-person visit. Now, this might vary a bit with your private insurers, but there's a great deal of opportunity here to not only use it to help sustain your practice now, but to assist later on when it's business back to usual and you've got tons of people coming into the office and you're trying to fit everybody in. You can use some telemedicine in there as well. So it'll be something that hopefully practices will continue to use even after the COVID-19 pandemic is over. Thank you. That's all I have. Whew, we got through it.
That's great, Yvonne. We have a couple of questions. Rosemary in the chat said, where do you go for the 10K loan?
Okay, so that's the EIDL, and that's the advance, and it's not fully $10,000. It's, let me get out there. It's $1,000 per employee. So basically, you go to the SBA website, you apply for the EIDL loan, and once you get to the end of that application process, it will ask if you want the advance, and you say, yes, I want the advance, and you complete the process from there.
And the advance is the portion you don't pay back, is that correct?
Right.
Anything above that advance is what you pay back, and it's treated like a conventional loan?
The EIDL, yeah, it's at 3.75% for about 30 years, yeah.
And I was on an SBA loan call earlier today, and they are saying that those loan packages are around 4-week turnaround currently.
Yeah, I know. That's why I said they ideally say that you should get this money at a certain period, but yeah. Thank you, Kelly. Yeah, again, they're not accepting applications currently. They have a backlog of applications because they ran out of money, right? So they're going to process those applications on a first-come, first-served basis. And at some point, hopefully, they will be able to open up the application system again for new applications. Anything else?
Kevin, why don't you share what happened? You said that a bill had just passed. Is Kevin on there? Would you read the...
Yeah, I'll read the...
read what Kevin, you put in there.
Kevin posted TMB facts for GA15 released right before this call, and then he put a tmb.state.text.us. There's a URL in the chat, so if y'all go to the chat down at the bottom of your screen, you can grab that URL and get more information. Oh, and Kevin's on now. He took himself off mute. Go ahead, Kevin.
Yeah, sorry. I was double muted. Yeah, so those FAQs just came out. Yvonne mentioned them, and they actually, for the GA15, they literally 5 or 10 minutes before the call, they were issued. And it's important because there are some pretty interesting distinctions under the governor's new order, what is critical and not critical. Mm-hmm. And especially with respect to physician obligations of reporting what they think may or not, may not be appropriate to do is now changed under the new order. So it's important to take a look at those and make sure if they are doing procedures, they're following what the governor says they can do.
Yep. I tell you, the information, it doesn't even matter what topic. If it's related to COVID-19, it's changing on an hourly basis. So you really do have to stay tuned pretty regularly.
Okay, Yvonne, are you helping physician practices complete all of these? Are they coming in to see you and get advice from you?
Well, so TMA has put together a practice viability toolkit on the TMA website. So it really, it provides a lot of this information, and we're continually updating it as all of this information continues to change on an hourly basis. So we're fielding calls for sure. Our knowledge center is getting calls from physicians. The individual consultants are getting calls from physicians. And then we're seeing a lot of traffic to that practice viability toolkit site on the TMA, textmed.org website. Yeah.
Any other questions? This is a lot to digest. Okay. Thanks so much, Yvonne, and hope to see all of you on Thursday. Have a good evening.
Thank you, Linda. You too.
Thanks, Yvonne. Thanks, everyone.
Thank you. Bye now.